Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity, who is off at the NRA convention at the end of this week. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. We didn't have a good one yesterday, Ian, so it's good to have the full allotment today. We should also let folks know that we're sponsored by Simply Safe Home Security. Right now, you can go to simplysafe.com/ricochet to get 10% off your home security system. Much more on them later in the podcast. Ian, big week in Washington. We've got still the potential for a shutdown, but that seems much more unlikely at this point. We've got the tax reform bill that was unveiled on Wednesday, and we have the updated version of the American Health Care Act, which Republicans would like to vote on sooner rather than later. This is, of course, the bill that never accumulated the number of votes needed to pass. So it never actually got a vote on the House floor. So they pulled it. They've changed it with an amendment from Congressman MacArthur of New Jersey. And a lot of what this is allowing states to have more say in what happens with their health care systems. The mainstream media is making this sound a lot more sinister than it is. This is CNN. A draft amendment obtained by CNN, first reported by Politico, gives renewed insight into where the GOP may be moving next. The amendment would allow states to seek waivers to weaken several key Obamacare insurance reforms that protect those with pre-existing conditions, including the benefits insurers must cover in their policies and the ban on allowing carriers to charge more based on a person's health background. Well, that sounds truly dreadful. But what is really happening here, Ian, seems to be that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach anymore. You don't have to offer the full truckload for every policy. You can take some things out, and if folks want to buy that and they don't think they're going to need coverage for other things, you can do that too. And amazingly, there's also the option to have people who rack up more health and coverage and health insurance needs actually pay a little more for their coverage. And another thing I know that's in here is community ratings are also potentially on the chopping block here. So still not quite sure if we're going to get to the number needed to pass this. You got the Freedom Caucus on board, but now the moderates are getting wobbly on this. So what do you make of it all?
On the policy side, this obviously isn't an ideal bill. It retains the general Obamacare regulatory framework. It's not a clean repeal, for instance, et cetera. There are a number of ways in which this bill would, with the MacArthur Amendment, which is the significant add-on that's changing people's minds about the bill as a whole, would present a variety of complications down the line in the continuing, regulatory boondoggle that is American healthcare. All of that said, it's a considerable step forward, again, policy-wise, from the bill that House leadership tried to force through a couple weeks ago. Again, not ideal, but a significant improvement. On the political side, I think that there's a good chance that this bill actually does pass. What the most significant development yesterday was, as you pointed out, Greg, that the House Freedom Caucus is now in general on board with this bill. And a number of conservative advocacy groups and think tanks, among them Club for Growth, which was a no on the original AHCA. So what that suggests is that a lot of the folks who wanted, who were most ardent for a clean repeal, are willing to compromise on some of that to move forward a bill that will do something relatively productive. That puts a lot of pressure on the moderate bloc, who, as you point out, still aren't on board with this, but do seem to be sort of disintegrating in their antagonism toward it. So it wouldn't be totally surprising if the House can actually move this thing out, which would be good. And then it goes to the Senate. And as people argued about the original AHCA, they can argue about this one too. The Senate will have a lot of leeway to revise, rewrite, reconstruct this thing. And hopefully given that the House will be less, given that if the House passes this, they'll have been less divided on the bill. Republicans on the Senate side might be inclined to try to push forward those gains rather than reduce them. So if this does happen, and if the Senate plays ball, this could be a significant legislative accomplishment, obviously, for the Trump administration, which has been looking for one. There's a lot of game left to play, so to speak, and there's no reason to rush this like they did the first go round. But this is all moving in the right direction, I think.
Ian, obviously, from what we heard from the Republican leadership the first time around, was that this is going to be a three-step process. You get this bill, which attacks kind of the structure, the financial structure of Obamacare with the taxes and the mandates and so forth. You can move that through reconciliation. Secretary Price at HHS can do a lot on his own to roll back, given the discretion afforded to the secretary in the original legislation. And then the third part would be these market-based reforms, which would probably require 60 votes in the Senate. So given how tough it's been to get to 216 and to get to potentially 50 plus one in the Senate, what does that tell us about whether phase three is ever going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. That was part of my problem with the original forcing through of the bill, was that basically the way that they rolled this out, which was terrible, but the way they rolled it out was with this idea of this calendar that was going, you know, once we get phase one done, then we'll get phase two done, then we'll get phase three. As that happened, you saw them slowly say, okay, that was wrong. This is not three phases. It's, quote, three prongs, which collapsed the calendar, or at least sought to collapse the calendar. Obviously, that was smarter. That was closer to the way that it should have been rolled out from the beginning. But the idea that you were going to be able to basically ram the original AHCA down the throats of even unwilling Republicans, and then in the future suddenly move this, you know, massive repeal legislation was nonsense. And so that was a reason, I think, to try and do as much as you can up front, especially because as the timeline, you know, stretches out, you're closer to the midterms, and no one wants to take a controversial, potentially controversial vote with elections looming. So take your time, do the first, you know, big movement as carefully and as thoroughly as you can, and then tweak after that. Don't sort of put off the major thing for the future and tweak at the beginning. And so obviously what they've come up with doesn't do that exactly, but it's significantly better than the original tactic.
Yeah, the good news is it's better, but not necessarily great. So we'll see how it plays out here in the coming days. Let's move to the bad martini now. And Ian, other than the wall, I'm guessing trade was probably one of the biggest issues Donald Trump hammered on during the 2016 presidential campaign. And NAFTA was at the centerpiece of that, as was the TPP. He withdrew us from the TPP within his first couple of days in office. And now NAFTA is in the crosshairs. But what we learned on Wednesday is that he's not ready to pull the plug just yet. He is willing to at least talk about perhaps reforming NAFTA. This is the New York Times. President Trump said on Thursday he had agreed to pleas from the leaders of Canada and Mexico not to withdraw immediately from the North American Free Trade Agreement, but he warned he would still pull the United States out if he could not negotiate a better deal. To the Twitters, quote, I received calls from the president of Mexico and the prime minister of Canada asking to renegotiate NAFTA rather than terminate, Mr. Trump said on Twitter. I agreed, subject to the fact that if we do not reach a fair deal for all, we will then terminate NAFTA. Relationships are good. Deal very possible, unquote. Mr. Trump's post showed once again his taste for high-stakes deal-making and his willingness to reverse himself. Only hours earlier, the president's aides put out word that he was likely to sign a directive starting a six-month clock to end the trade agreement. But as the Times point out, Trump on the campaign had talked about being willing to renegotiate. So, Ian, a lot of folks on the right a little bit worried about this. I know Ben Sasse thought that withdrawing from NAFTA, when it looked like that was going to be the case, I believe disaster was the word he used. So some folks are breathing a sigh of relief right now that it's not necessarily on life support, but it's going to be renegotiated and we'll see what happens. You're still pretty skeptical about what's coming down the pike here, though.
Yeah, so we had a qualifiedly good martini, and I'll say this is a qualifiedly bad one. It's good that Trump is not just going to immediately withdraw, and there are legal questions about whether he can. The mechanisms are tangled, so he's backed off that and said he's going to renegotiate. My concern is on a large scale, free trade is largely beneficial. NAFTA has been massively beneficial to the U.S., although its benefits are diffused and its negative consequences are concentrated, which is part of the reason that, you know, Trump can go to a specific sector and say NAFTA is killing you, and they say, yeah, you know, that's true, because it potentially may have affected, you know, these individual sectors, while across the nation, the free movement of goods and services across these borders has been beneficial. And that's just the principle of free trade versus protectionism. And on the whole, a freer trade system is generally better. On the specifics here, though, my concern is that Trump has used NAFTA as a scapegoat. And he has never identified any particular provision in NAFTA with which he disagrees. So when it comes to renegotiating, quote unquote, it's entirely unclear, at least to me, what exactly it is he plans to renegotiate, because he's never said. And so what I'm worried about is that if you go into this the way that Trump seems to be going into this, the odds are not that you get a better deal. The odds are that you get a worse one. Setting aside the question of free trade and protectionism in the principled abstract, I don't think that Donald Trump, and it doesn't seem like there's been much attention to this among his economic advisory group either, have given a lot of thought to precisely what you could renegotiate in NAFTA to create a larger net benefit to the United States economy, not just, you know, a benefit to specific sectors that would be a negative, that would be a net negative in general. So that is worrisome to me, and I think it's part of the general Trump approach to things, which tends to be fairly vague and hand-waving and not sufficiently specific enough to offer much confidence.
So, Ian, we'll see who ends up getting their way here and who ends up being right. Time will tell. In the meantime, if you'd like to keep your home safe, that requires very little debate, actually. Simply Safe Home Security is where you want to go. When you order your Simply Safe Home Security system online, you're taking the first easy step to protecting your home and family. With entry sensors, motion sensors, and glass break sensors, soon you'll make your home a burglar's worst nightmare. And you'll be done getting it all set up in under an hour. Simply Safe comes pre-programmed to work right out of the box. Just plug in the base station, and it will talk you through the whole process. Seriously, even people who aren't the slightest bit handy can install this thing. The entire system is wireless, so there's no need to drill any holes into your walls or do any other permanent damage to your home. And once you're set up, Simply Safe makes it just as easy to stay protected month to month. There are no long-term contracts here. None. No hidden fees. And it's just $14.99 a month for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, professional monitoring and emergency dispatch service. Hard to beat that deal. Don't wait another day to take your home safety into your own hands. Get Simply Safe. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now to get 10% off your home security system. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. Go now, simplysafe.com/ricochet. All right, on to our crazy martini now, Ian. And, well, California's the place you want to be. And when it comes to crazy martinis this week, that's for sure. We had it with the courts. We had it with Ann Coulter and Berkeley and that whole situation. And now we're back to immigration in a way when it comes to construction of the wall, if the wall ever gets constructed. Los Angeles Times. California legislators took the first step on Tuesday to ban state government contracts for any company that helps build President Trump's promised wall along the Mexico border, with the author of the plan urging colleagues, quote, to be on the right side of history, unquote. The bill by State Senator Ricardo Lara, Democrat, of course, would prohibit any company from receiving a new or extended contract with the state of California if it participates in a future effort to build a new wall construction along the 2,000-mile international border. Quote, the wall is another attempt to separate and divide us, Lara said in testimony to the Senate Governmental Organization Committee. Quote, it sends a message that we are better off in a homogeneous society. Ian, I'm pretty sure that's the exact message they're sending by saying, if you don't agree with us, we won't do business with you anymore.
So this is really amazing. This is, I believe, passed out of committee in the state Senate.
Yes.
So this is now open for debate in the upper body of the state legislature. I mean, this is really extraordinary. There's a hilarious element here in that Democrats have been fighting generally rightly, although frequently overzealously, to ensure that all companies are open for contract. You know, the government contracts don't discriminate among employers, and that everybody has an equal opportunity to, you know, participate in government projects. That's been the push for the last, you know, 25 years. And now here's California doing the exact opposite thing. It's just hilariously adverse to everything they've been pushing for. The second element, of course, is that this is probably flatly illegal. I'm not sure precisely how the bill is written, but basically what this constitutes, I spoke to a lawyer about it a little while ago, is that this looks to be just thinly veiled viewpoint discrimination. And, you know, this being California, this might still survive courts, assuming that it were passed into law and signed. It might still make it through an appeal or two. But basically, what they're doing is the equivalent of saying an organization that participates in some other legal activity can be barred from, you know, federal funding for participating in that activity. You know, imagine if a legislature were proposing that no government job could be open to an organization that had, you know, helped to build a Planned Parenthood, something like that. You know, Democrats would be screaming, and rightly so, because under the law, that would be flatly illegal. I think this is pretty much the exact same situation. And if a court, if this passes into law and a court doesn't dispatch it with prejudice, I would be surprised and aghast for the precedent it would set.
Well, it's a California issue and a California court, so I won't be shocked by anything they do pretty much at this point. But Ian, it just goes to the exhausting thing that we've talked about in the past of how politics and only the right side of history politics, man, that phrase just grinds my gears, has just infiltrated everything. We see it. We've talked about it with ESPN, and I think some of those chickens came home to roost yesterday. We see it. We saw it with Brendan Eich at Mozilla. The guy supported traditional marriage, and he had to be drummed out. And now, even this morning on Twitter, I'm sure you've seen it, there's a story and a debate about how barbecue is now the most political food in America. Nothing is just free of this nonsense anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had not seen that story, and that just grieves me wildly, because if as a Texan I can't eat barbecue, you know.
It
might be time to secede.
I didn't actually read the story, so I don't know if it's, you know, Kansas City versus Memphis versus Texas, or I don't care. If it's good barbecue, I'm going to eat it. Doesn't matter.
It says absolutely nothing about how I vote when I go into the into the voting booth. Exactly. It just says that I am an American who likes meat.
That's right. Why can't I just do that? I save my political protest for Starbucks because I don't drink coffee anyway. So not exactly hard to stick to that one. Ian, great to have you with us the past couple days, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3-Martini Lunch, and visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, simplysafe.com/ricochet right now to get 10% off your home security system.